Hey, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be talking to Amy Lillard. She is a Kensington author, and I am really excited to talk to her about her start of a new series. I always love when somebody's starting a new series, and I'm in on book one, so I'm looking forward to talking to her at the bottom of the hour. But right now, I get to turn to somebody. Well, she's in California, and I am so happy to talk to Rachel Housel Hall. And the name of her new book, and she's a very talented author, and it's really quite a thrill to be talking to her, is We Lie Here. And it is a thriller. It is a real thriller. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Patsy.
Wow.
How are you this morning?
Okay. Well, you have a nice little twisty mind there, girl. It's fun. Well, I always love to talk to somebody, well, with television experience, with writing experience, living in the Hollywood era area of the world. I was there briefly. I didn't last long enough, but I did enjoy it, and I look back on it fondly. And so I was really thrilled when I read your book. I thought, I like this. You really put, you know, when somebody can take you to a place and you really feel like you're there. Well, you've done that with We Lie Here. It is really good.
Thank you so much. Yes, I love Los Angeles. I am one of those rare natives who actually likes being here. So I'm glad that comes across in my writing.
Oh, it does. And it's so, you're so observant. You know, there's so much to observe there, even more than any place else, because there are so many idiosyncrasies people have.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a rich area to write about.
It is, and that's one reason I love Los Angeles so much, because you could just sit down anywhere and something interesting is happening, and it may not be a big interesting thing, but someone's always saying something or has a look or something. You know, it's vibrant, and the colors out here are great, so you get to kind of see people at their best and their worst in wonderful sunlight and sunset. So, yeah, I'm going to be writing about this city and this people forever and ever.
Well, that's true. You know, that's one of the things what I always talk about, you know, joy on paper. It is that joy of writing. And I remember that the last time that Mary Higgins Clark was on my program, she was 89 years old. And, you know, and that's the
goal.
Isn't that wonderful about writing that you can keep going and going?
No, I love it. I really do. I get up, you know, really early in the morning, 4:40 every morning. And it's not a slog, because I really like figuring out what story to tell, how to make a twist, what observation I'm going to share. You know, I look forward to the journey. That doesn't say that I'm, you know, never disappointed or tired. It's just I like doing it. I really love writing. And I hope to one day be like Mary Higgins Clark, still putting it in at 89 years old. Oh, my goodness.
Well, it comes through. This joy of writing comes through in your books, because, well, all of them. I have to tell my listeners that, of course, you are a New York Times best-selling author. I love your book, These Toxic Things. And tell us some of your other books before we get into the new one.
Ah, yes. So These Toxic Things, which came out last year, is about a young digital archaeologist who learns more about her origins. And Now She's Gone, which came out before that, is a story about a private investigator who has to find a woman who doesn't want to be found. And then They All Fall Down, which came out before that. It's a story, it's a retelling, an homage, if you will, about on Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, where I take seven sinners, in this case, to an island, and they have some sort of reckoning. And, of course, I wrote a novella with James Patterson.
Yeah.
In 2017, which is very exciting.
Yeah, we sort of want to mention that in passing. Oh, by the way, just on the side, you know, James Patterson and I got together, wrote a little novella here. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, no, that was an incredible experience. I learned so much from that experience, how to get in and out of a scene, keep the pages turning. He truly is a master in that, and I feel so blessed to have had the opportunity to write with Mr. Patterson.
Well, you've had some wonderful experiences, and it comes through now in this new book. I got the kick out of it. you know, family parties, having a big party.
Yes.
I've had a few occasions where I've...
Yeah. Everybody's kind of had that kind of... They can come, you know, if you're not from Los Angeles, okay, that's fine, but you've been...
Oh, yeah.
...family event. And just the trepidation and dread sometimes that brings.
Yeah, especially when you're the one in charge of it. When it's up to you to bring everybody together and hopefully everyone will be okay and not, well, in your case, you don't want everybody to be okay. You needed something bad.
Right. Yes. And because in reality, you know, sometimes the people who are planning it, they look okay, but they're not. You know, they may not like the person they're planning this for, or they have to censor whatever they're going to say for that weekend to just get through it. So, yeah, it's like, it's a hard thing. And then when, you know, some distant cousin finds you in the parking lot at the Holiday Inn.
Oh, we don't want to give too much away. But
everybody.
There are cousins. It's sometimes those cousins. You know, I've got a whole bunch of them. We have there's a county in northern Michigan where half the people in the county are my cousins. So
oh, wow.
I can always run. My father had 12 brothers and sisters. So... You can
imagine. Yes, that's how
it happens. Yeah, that's sort of, you know. So I'm experienced with cousins.
Well, exactly.
But tell us about this wonderful character you've come up with. I like Yara Gibson. I think she's fascinating. And because, well, one thing, she's a writer, too.
She is. She is coming back. Yara is a television writer. And she's returning to her hometown of Palmdale, which is in the Mojave Desert. About 70 miles north of Los Angeles. And she's coming home to throw a 20th wedding anniversary celebration for her parents. And Yara has, you know, she has some things going on. She is a severe asthmatic. So, like, one of the last places a severe asthmatic likes living is a place with constant dust and heat and apparently smoke. So Yara's already kind of dreading not being able to literally breathe when she goes home. And like a cousin comes out of the woodworks and says, I have something to tell you. But before Yara can find out what that is, her cousin winds up dead. So Yara is trying to figure out what's going on with the cousin, trying to keep this party on schedule, dealing with family and a weird death in her family. So she has a lot going on and trying to breathe.
that's a big part of it. Yes. Well, the concept I think is always great when you come out with the concept. Did this come from something in your family? You had a big reunion that you were responsible?
Well, not one specifically, but just, you know, I'm 52, so 52 years worth of Thanksgiving and Christmases and other people's family events and just paying attention, being observant and listening to how people talk to each other. I'm always interested in that, how we treat each other. And while a crime may not be something you do that isn't arrest-worthy, it's still something that's hurtful. And I'm interested in those hurtful small things that wind up becoming, you know, something that tears a family apart. And We Lie Here is kind of founded on that. I wanted it in the desert, a place that's uncomfortable, a place with extremes. And I wanted part of it also to be in the Angeles National Forest. And, you know, to get to any forest, anywhere, you're taking these small two-lane highways that twist and turn with cliffs and all the rest of it. And that's where, I wanted to set a twisty story, a desert where dead things are found and are buried and discovered. You know, it's all related to family and secrets and origin. So, yeah, it's a seemingly small story, but the ideas are big and very relatable, I think.
I think so, too. I like that when you get to the cottage part.
Yeah,
I thought that was great. Again, beautifully written, taking us right to, to a location. And I love that when an author can do that. Now, of course, as you said, I kept looking at your picture yesterday, I think today, when I was looking at it, I knew your accomplishments. I knew, I had already read Toxic before, but you looked such a baby. I kept thinking, oh my God, she's
thank you.
You look so good. And and then I looked also then at your webpage, and I was impressed with that. I think it's fantastic that you have one of the essays that I saw is Finding Lou, the Police Procedural. This is How to Write a Mystery, a handbook by Mystery Writers of America. So you got involved in all this knowledge about crime, and tell us about this interest.
I growing up in Los Angeles, there's plenty going on here, and I grew up in a part of Los Angeles that had extra spicy things going on. So, some gang stuff, some drug stuff. And as a very quiet, bookish child, it scared me, but I was more curious, once again, about it. Wanting to know why this was happening. Why are people jumping each other in the alley? Why is the helicopter here tonight, the police helicopter? And I was a church kid. I grew up on Seventh Day Adventist. So, constantly surrounded with sin and the wages of sin being death and trying to figure all this out. And writing was the way I did it. Disappearing into books helped me have some sense of control. And then I learned that I could write it out. And that's what I did. I went to UC Santa Cruz for college. But I didn't really kind of know that I could write the novel that I wanted to write. Like every young writer, you have your literary icons. Mine, was James Baldwin and Toni Morrison. But I didn't feel smart or important enough to write that kind of story. And everything that I wrote, I didn't know that it was genre. And so I finally, after, my first book was published in 2002, and not being able to land another contract because I didn't know my voice, I got closer and closer and closer to what would eventually be Land of Shadows, the first in my police procedural series. And I haven't left crime since. I think crime writing and crime stories are a great catch-all for any kind of story you want to tell. You can write romance and it can be a crime story. Sci-fi can be a crime story because crime is something that happens to all of us. And this is my way of, it's like free therapy for me. I've had readers say, oh, sometimes your work triggers me. It's like, well, what I'm writing about triggers me. That's why I'm writing it. I'm trying to figure it out too. And this has always been my way of trying to gain some control and trying to figure it out. And now that I'm a mom, and I'm a mom of an 18-year-old, I have new fear. I worry for her, and I want her to be okay. And all that is coming out in my stories. And, Toxic Things was the first of those mom worry stories. And here I am with We Lie Here, worried about, one lovely young woman and hoping she's okay.
Now, when you were a little girl, who encouraged you to write?
Both of my parents. My dad is a great storyteller. He's a master toastmaster who's won speech contests. And my mom, while she's not a writer, she is an encourager. She put me in classes. She read my early things. She's always been there for me, and she's still there for me. And both of them they weren't surprised when I said that I wanted to go to college to read and write for 4 years. Is all I did. So it's like, of course you are. And then I have siblings. I have two brothers and a sister who we're each other's sounding board, and I get my ideas from all of them. I get a lot of the names that I use in my stories, especially from my sister, who teaches public school, and that's a great place for names. So I and my husband, and we've been married for 26 years, and I remember reading bad prose to him in my little studio apartment downtown Los Angeles, and here we are, and now I've pulled my daughter into everything I do, and she does my social media videos, and she gives me ideas, and she reads. So I'm surrounded by love. I'm surrounded by people who are encouraging me and are excited for this journey.
Well, you were blessed to have parents who encouraged you to read and to write.
Yeah,
because I, strangely enough, you know, although I've been reading since I was three, and I, by the time I started this program 7 years ago, I'd already read, 10,000 books.
Right.
But I didn't realize until just recently, when there was something on television and they were asking some people, sort of people in the street, questions, and mm-hmm. I didn't realize how very ignorant so many people are. And then I looked into it and I discovered that only, 50% of Americans can only read at a seventh or eighth grade level.
Wow, that high?
Did you know that? I didn't know that. I mean, I was thinking, you know, it's like maybe 15%, 20%, from the bad neighborhoods couldn't read. But it's 50%. 50%.
Wow.
So now I think I'm going to go on a new campaign here. And since you're involved so much with writers, and you were on the board of Mystery Writer of America, Grandmaster, 11 Grandmasters have been on my program.
What?
Yeah, 11 of them have been on my program in 7 years. And it's, it's wonderful. And I talked to it, but I had not realized that there were 50% of Americans who read at a seventh or eighth grade level. What are we doing? We need readers if we're going to have writers. And I think this is something that I think all the writing all the associations for writers has to start addressing this. We have to encourage. This is crazy.
I think part of it is what I was feeling as a young writer, that, the only things you can write are important things. I think a lot of people feel that, you can only read so certain types of books. I think we need to open up the tent more and say all reading is good reading. Remove all this kind of stigmatism about what you should read. Everything you read is some good reading. I want my daughter to read broadly and as promiscuously as I do. That's encouraging any kind of readership is important. I agree with you.
And this is something I think that we have to, as people who love books, we really have to start addressing, because we need a generation of readers. We need people to buy these books, It's great to write them, and then to realize that 50% of Americans couldn't pick up your book and understand it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's frightening when you think about it.
It really is.
You sort of imagine when you see, a book come out, you think, well, the kind of people who would be sitting around reading it. But you never think that there are 50% of the people who could not read that book.
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't know the stat was that high.
It's terrible. I mean, we have to start paying attention to this, because there are so many wonderful books, and we just need people to read and to encourage, to encourage reading. Parents have to just do it. Turn off all this electronic stuff and just get a book in a kid's hand and start reading. There's so many wonderful books written nowadays, for all ages, and there's all the diverseness. When I was young,
and I was going to say that.
I
think that's part of it too. People are starting to see themselves in these stories, which is so important.
But I don't think it was ever necessary to see yourself in a story. I mean, it's nice to do it. But when I was 11 years old, I was 12 years old when I first read James Baldwin. Now, I had no experience of James Baldwin's lifestyle. I mean, I didn't. But, I read that book, and I was blown away. And it's
here. I read Stephen King as a little kid, and I didn't know what the heck a mane was. You know, I just knew that this clown in the sewer scared me.
Exactly.
I think because kids beat each other, literally beat each other all the time on social media, whereas we didn't. I think there's just more awareness of self and others than when we were coming up. I think that's part of what that's the issue of not connecting as well. You're connected. These kids are more connected than ever electronically, but socially, not necessarily. You know, it's a weird dynamic.
Well, you know, about literacy, I think we have to go tell it on the mountain. We have to get out there and say, start reading. You know, You know, we had these fantastic authors out there, and they deserve readers. So I was really taken with your writing. I think you're brilliant, really brilliant.
And Thank you so much coming from you.
You know, it's important that we encourage people to read, young people to read. And I sometimes feel bad. I'm like encouraging them to read, and then I didn't realize that I must know a lot of these 50% people. You know, I must know people. I must, you know, interact with people who can't read, which never occurred to me, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Partly because I lived in Europe a long time, and the literacy rate there is very high. The schools are much tougher than here. You don't go from grade to grade over there unless you can do the subject.
You can pass.
Yeah.
Right.
This is nonsense.
But
so that sort of got me your reading, realizing how important your books are, that there you should have so many more readers too, because you're a great writer. So, Rachel Housel Hall, what's your website is what?
www.rachelhousel.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Rachel Housel.
Rachel Housel, it's a great name, and as I said on the website, you don't have Hall, so I'm telling people just look for Rachel Housel. You have a wonderful story there about your beginnings. I think your essays, the Finding Lou and Police Procedural is great. It's a great read. People should go there and get your, you know, read more about you, read more about your books. I just want to thank you, you know, so much for being on Joy on Paper today, because I think you're an important writer. And, you know, when we're talking about important American writers, I think you fall right in there, because you've touched on a certain area, you know, specifically in this sort of Southern California area, and you write so well about it.
Thank you. You're
making your place there, and I don't know, any of your books been picked up for films yet?
They have been optioned.
Optioned, I know.
Yes.
I was going to say.
You know that.
I know. Three of my spec scripts were optioned in Hollywood. They went into turnaround, which was why I am now on the west coast of Florida. Instead of Los, I gave up.
Instead of Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, I was in Los Angeles, and they kept turning around, and, you know, I just got like, you know, you get paid more when they pick up the option again, but that's got boring. So, anyway, but I'm, you know, when you have a movie deal, will you come back on Joy on Paper?
I certainly will. I'd love to come back.
And you can tell us about it and tell us a little bit more about the joys of living in Los Angeles, because sometimes people don't hear about that anymore.
Exactly.
And I think you're a wonderful, wonderful person to talk about that. And we'd love to hear about somebody getting a movie deal. And it's nice that you'll be right there when they make it.
Yes.
Because
I love that opportunity.
I am sure they're going to pick up at least one or two or three. We don't know. You're going to keep writing for another 50 years.
Just like Mary Higgins Clark.
Exactly. And it's been an absolute joy to talk to you.
Same here. Thank you again for the invite.
Okay. Bye-bye, Rachel. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, she's so nice. I like her so much. She's got a million-dollar smile. You must go to her website. It's beautiful. Okay. We're going to go to commercials, and then we'll be right back with Amy.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and this is really exciting. I love to be in on the start of a new series. Amy Lillard has written a book called Dairy Dairy, Quite Contrary. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Whoa, this is exciting.
Very.
Woo! You are, of course, already a USA Today best-selling author, and now you have this new series called Sunshine Cafe Mystery Series, and I love it.
Oh, it's lots of fun. It's Sunflower, though.
I'm Sunflower.
Yeah.
What did I say?
The first one that escaped had sunshine on it. I don't know what happened, like the first arc. So.
It is Sunflower. I know it's Sunflower, right?
Yeah, because Kansas is the sunflower.
And that's my favorite flower. And why did I look at this? They sent me this. Suddenly I looked down at the page and I say, I knew in my head it's wrong. Sunflower, of course. That's my flower. Everybody knows in my family, if they're going to get me flowers, they get me sunflowers.
Absolutely. They're the best.
They are the best. Absolutely. Positively. And this new series, I love it too. It's Cafe. I love... with a little there cafe, you know, we always like to, how can I say, in little towns, a little accent mark over a letter means a big deal. I mean, it really puts us on the map. If we open a little business in a small town, and I know small town, woo, so to have that little accent over the E makes it a really special cafe, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And then it's a really small town over Kansas. It's actually a real town.
I know.
There's only like 200 people there, and half of them are Amish. And it's just the cutest little town you'd ever want to go to. I actually made up the cafe because there really are only three places to eat in the real Yoder, Kansas.
Well, in Yoder, have they now designated a day of the year for you?
I think they should.
They have to. They have to do that, and there has to be a parade in which you're going to ride on a float. Yes, and handing out a prize to somebody for something. I don't know. The best cats, the best dogs. Yeah, you have to come out with a whole series, and they're going to have a day for you. And you're putting them on the map.
Yeah, kind of, I guess. I kind of feel that they were on the map, like, for their Amish, because even though they're such a small community, they welcome people to come and visit their Amish. There's a lot of things that happen around it. There's a, you know, bigger cities and stuff that have a lot of things that happen. The state fair is a big deal in that area. So I just tried to put them on the map a little bit more, maybe. But it's a fun, fun town. The place that I stayed when I was there doing the last research trip was the place that my heroine actually lives in the book. But I just changed the name a little bit. It's a revised chicken coop. Honestly, stayed in the chicken coop.
Uh-huh.
How much fun is that?
Exactly. Well, you know, isn't it fun to be a writer and to be able to create an entire, you know, you have the basic town there, but now you can create everything in that town that you want and just have so much fun?
It's most fun ever.
Well, because you've already written a bunch of books before.
I have.
So you come to this with a lot of knowledge on what you need to do right.
That's right. What you need to do right. I think I got it down this time. You know, that's what writers always strive for, is doing it right. And we just keep practicing and practicing.
And that's the lovely thing about being a writer, because you can keep going. I was recently just talking about Mary Higgins Clark. The last time she was on my program, she was 89 years old. So that's it. And this is going to be fun, because this series is going to be lots of fun. Tell us about how you came out with the idea for Sissy Yoder and how she gets back. You know, they say you can't go home again, but sometimes you do. And
Yoder's not actually her home. She is from an Amish family who left the Amish, moved out of state. They went down into Oklahoma, which is about 4 hours from Yoder. I live in Oklahoma. And they came down to Oklahoma and began a life, and it just so happened that family members in Yoder requested some help. So Sissy kind of escapes her crumbling relationship life that's going down the tubes with her cowboy boyfriend, and she goes to Yoder to kind of help out. So it's kind of going home again, but kind of not. She knows a few people, but not very many people, and she's still considered the new person in town. Sissy is a closet. She has a secret identity. She does like an Ann Landers kind of column called Aunt Beth, and she gives out advice, which she has so much trouble taking herself. But this is her career, but she doesn't tell anybody, because who wants their alter ego to be an 80-year-old grandmother when you're 30? So she keeps out all the secrets, and she's got her secrets, too.
And it's fun. It's just, you've created a whole wealth of characters. As I'm reading, I'm thinking, oh, she's having fun doing this.
That's one thing I do love about cozy mysteries and, like, rom-coms, is you can have so much fun with quirky characters and offbeat people that can walk on and then you never have to see them again, but then they're the most fun to keep bringing back and keep adding to the mix to add some more humor and just make it more interesting.
Exactly. And a dozen books from now, you've drawn on many of these characters and made them important in some books and less important in others. So it's just fun to be able to do that. Now, I noticed in your acknowledgments, I love that you put that right at the beginning, which is also something that Mary Higgins Clark always did. She always put her acknowledgments at the beginning, because she said, I am just so grateful. And now, one of the things you mentioned is an editor. And I wanted to look at it, if you could explain from you know, a very experienced writer's point of view. Over the past 2 years during this pandemic, a lot of people have come to me. A lot of my listeners have started writing. Some of them, you know, a different type. Some, you know, are just writing like their memoirs or family stories. Others are more, you know, far-reaching. Some are doing sci-fi. Some are doing thrillers, and quite a few are doing cozy mysteries. And so this is one of the things that I knew right from the beginning, that if you're going to write cozy mysteries, you want it to be a series. So you want to have this sort of lay down a sort of a base, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When you write a book, do you write it completely and then show it to an editor, or do you work along with an editor?
We kind of work along together. Now, I write for Kensington, and I'll tell you, Kensington is so great about allowing the writer to have control over the story. I don't get micro-edited on developmental. Like, they let me kind of control the story, which is awesome, and so much, that's a lot more fun than having an editor that wants to change every little detail. But, you know, it happens too, and sometimes the stories are better for it. But my editor requires me to send in an outline. He wants to know that it's going to get from where I said I was starting to where I said I was ending in a normal fashion, in a logical fashion. It's usually about, I usually try to send about 10 to 15 pages, but the last time I think I sent him like 30 and an apology letter. I'm so sorry, but it just kept coming, you know. That was for a romance that I really felt like it had to be put together in a, you know, really cohesive manner. And but this one, you know, I send in 12 or so pages. He says yes. And then if I have any problems when I'm writing, then I go back. But once I get the outline approved, I write the whole book and send it in.
And then do you ever have to edit it? Or when you send it in, is it absolutely perfect?
Oh, no. We go through 3 or 4 rounds of edits after that. He makes his marks. He does more of a, like, just finding the little mistakes, and anything big, like, you said he didn't have any children on page 24, and then on page 189, his son walks in, like, make up your mind. Which happens so much more than you really think, because you get to writing, and you just keep it going, and then those words just are, like, concrete at some point, and you don't notice that they're conflicting at the same time. Then it goes to a line editor who really, if you get a really good line editor, they will question anything and everything, like facts. You know, I write a lot about the Amish, and so they'll say, is this really something that happens in the Amish community, or I didn't think this kind of thing happened in the Amish community, or anything. Like, it's January, and you have bugs buzzing above the light. Like, you can't do that. And not in Oklahoma, you know, or Kansas. And then you'll go through those edits. You can reject them and you can accept them. And then I send those in, but that gives me another opportunity to look at it. And then after that, we go to galleys, where you get pretty much the book as it would be published, one page on a page, so you can see how it's laid out. If there's any problems with margins or spacing. And then pretty much at that point, the only changes are really necessary ones. You can't change somebody's eye color or, you know, I think I'll just take that word out. Like, no. That's the really, really major thing. Like, I think I named a character something wrong one time, and it didn't jive. Like, she was a different name in another book that had already been published, and I went to the editor of the production editor, and I was like, we have to change her name. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, we have to change her name. Because then you have to go through and adjust all those margins again every time that name is mentioned. So I'm sure he loves me at that one.
Now, let's go back.
Yeah.
When you sit down at the typewriter, you're going to start. When you start your first chapter, of course, it's always, you want to get that one right. And I thought your opening line for this one was perfect. And I, whenever I remember an opening line, it's good. I'm going to remember this opening line for years from now. And when I go to, you know, writers' conferences or groups where I talk, I'm going to say, well, I've got the perfect opening line here. I thought it was so clever. I need an Adam and Eve on a raft and cry over it.
Cry over it.
Now, that is so beautiful. I mean, this one, I hope that they're going to do, like, you know, now in Yoda, they're going to have a gift shop, you know, dedicated to you. This one they have to put on a cup. They have to put on coasters. I want them to put this on everything because,
yeah.
I mean, it's going to be, I need an Adam and Eve on a raft and cry over it. This is beautiful.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you appreciated it so much. I was sitting here thinking, as you were talking about first lines, I was thinking the big gray fish slips silently through the dark waters, which is like Jaws. And horrible and horrifying. And I'm like, was it really good? Yeah, Adam and Eve, that's not too bad.
That's not bad at all. As a matter of fact, tea towels. They should sell tea towels.
Hey, that's a great idea.
I want that on a tea towel. Okay.
I'll see what I can do.
You see what you can do. As a matter of fact, the Amish do beautiful embroidery. They could embroider that.
Yeah.
This could be a big seller. If people drive through town, they're going to pick this up for $10. I'm telling you, with that, right there, they've got a winner. They're going to love you. You know, you're going to bring in income to this little town.
I was thinking about trying to go up. They have a Heritage Day in August, but our weather is so incredibly hot right now. I'm not sure I want to even be out in the... anywhere, like.
When's your birthday? What's your birthday?
September.
September what?
20th.
September 20th. Okay, I think I'm going to write. Do they have a mayor in that town? I'm going to write to him or her and say that I think they should dedicate September 20th. Okay, now they have it. Okay, it's going to be the Amy Lillard Day once a year. That's a good time. September, it cools down.
Yeah, it'll be cooler.
Yeah, they can have a. You know, we can start off small this year with maybe just, you know, you sitting in the back of a convertible waving and the kids riding bikes, you know, decorated. I think we're going to plan that already.
Well, I've got the convertible, so we're set.
Well, my goodness, you're ready. You're ready for this.
That's part of the most fun when we go to. And I say we, my best friend and I travel together and go to these Amish communities to do research. And I have a Beetle convertible, like the most conspicuous car in that town. We're trying to do research. We're buzzing around with the top down. We did have to put the top up several times because it is a lot of dirt roads there.
Well, that's perfect. That is perfect. And I, as a matter of fact, I would have them, if I were you, I'd have them do that, do a decal on the car with that. I need an Adam and Eve right there.
You put it on the door of the neck.
That's right. You're going to be famous. My goodness. You know, there's not a heck of a lot that people know about Kansas. Mostly people just drive through Kansas. So,
yeah.
You know.
Kansas is a cute little place. You know, I live in Oklahoma, so a lot of people think we still live in teepees and things.
I know, because one of the great Oklahoma writers is Carolyn Hart.
Yes.
And she was one of my first guests here on Joy on Paper.
Aw. Yeah, I live in Tulsa, you know, and my son went to Will Rogers High School, which is where Essie Hinton went to school. So my little offer to speak to the English class about writing books was kind of smiled at. Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Well, the new book is called Dairy Dairy, Quite Contrary. And I'm sure you're working on book two, right? Right?
Book two's already done.
Okay. Knowing Kensington, once Kensington grabs you, they keep you going.
They keep me going. Book three, I'm going to write this winter, fall.
Well, it's fantastic. It's a fun read. I think everybody's going to, they're just going to be gravitating to, you know, to Sissy. I think she's a wonderful character. But then let's quickly mention a few of her relatives.
Okay, Bethel?
Yeah.
We got Aunt Bethel, who's the grumpy Amish woman who's broken her leg and is not very happy about having the downtime. We've got her cousin, Lizzie, who is pregnant with twins and on bed rest, which is another reason why Sissy comes up. Let's see, there's Daniel. I love Daniel. I don't remember how much of a part he had in book one. You know, once you get this far into it, I'm like, oh my, book one. That's Lizzie's husband. I really like him, too. He's a good guy. When then we have not a relative, we have Gavin, who's the newspaper reporter and possible love interest.
Well, you know, you've got enough characters here to keep you going for quite a while. You're very clever. I love the way you come out with things like bull in your eye dinner, a diner, the bull in your eye diner, and my goodness, a daily special chicken fried steak for $7.99. I'm going.
Oh, yeah. The chicken fried steak there. Yeah, you have to go. Yeah, chicken fried steak's the best. Now, the real diner is called the Bullseye Diner. There is a real diner. Actually, I have tons of pictures on, I have a Amish dedicated website. Like, I have my regular website, and then I have amysamishadventures.com, and you can look at all the pictures I took while I was in Yoder and see the real places. And I recently did a blog post on there about what's real and what's made up in Yoder. There's no gas station in Yoder. I had to make up a gas station.
Oh, wow. This is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. You're going to really have this little town's going to be on the map, and it'll be more famous than any place else in Kansas.
Thanks. And, I love it.
And again, mention your website again.
It's actually amywritesmysteries.com.
I like that title, Amy Writes Mysteries, and you certainly do, and really great mysteries, all of them. People can check all of them out, but the new series, which is going to be, I think, a real winner with Kensington, they've already come out with a nice, lovely cover, one of their great design covers, and it's a Sunflower Cafe mystery, and I think it's a winner.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
And book two will be out when?
I believe it's July of next year.
July of next year. Well, then I know where you're going to be. You're going to be right here because we're going to be talking about it because I love your writing. Just clever. The book moves fast. It's just a fun read, everybody. You will love it. And just to look at the book and... you know, I like when a title makes me smile. And Dairy, quite contrary, makes me smile. So, again, Amy Lillard, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. You are a joy.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Another wonderful Kensington author. I've been so blessed with Kensington. And, of course, my favorite is, you know... I just can't stop it. Whenever I think of Carol J. Perry, I think of how wonderful she is. And she was my first guest in the studio, a Kensington author. And I remember when she didn't have the book to hand me. She just handed me a cover of her book, her first Witch City mystery. And I looked at it and I said, oh my goodness, this is a real author. Because I will tell you something. When I started this program, I didn't know any authors. I didn't know anybody. And there I met, she was my first real live author in person. And so I am so happy that Carol J. Perry is with Kensington. She has beautiful covers. She just came out with book 12, which we finally had the wedding. And it took us 12 books to get to the wedding, and it's Till Death. And I hope you will get that book because that's a wonderful, wonderful book. And she's working on book 13, and she's always working. You know, that's a fun thing when you become a writer. You always have you have something to do every day. Really, you can work every day and just have fun. And both of the authors I had today, they have fun writing and they enjoy themselves. And that's what I've been always telling all of you. You know, it's right now, this is the time of the year for reading. A lot of you people are going to be on the beaches and out camping and out in the woods, or just laying in your backyard and by the pool. This is a time to start reading. And then think about what I said at the beginning, that I did not realize that there were so many people who do not read and who do not know how to read. So make sure that you encourage your family, your children, your grandchildren to read more and to read more widely. There's so many opportunities nowadays, and there's so many diverse books that there's really no reason that everybody can't read at a, well, I don't know, I guess if you graduate from high school, you should be reading at a high school level. I know that seems like a strange concept to have to say. You know, if you graduated from high school, you should be reading at a 12th grade level. I don't know. When I discovered this the other day, as I said, I did not know how bad the situation was. It really makes you sort of crazy that we have attention just as citizens of our country. We have not paid attention to the fact that so many of our citizens can't read. If they can't read, how much do they not understand? Because in the end, if you just hear things on television or you know, see things flashed on your tablets or your iPhones, you're not really understanding anything. So you have to become a reader, and that's important. So, and that reminds me, again, I just sent off some books to St. Jude's Hospital for Children. And if you, again, the children who are in the hospital, especially during the summertime, it's so difficult for them. They're in the hospital. They know other kids are outside playing, and they can't be outside, but they can be reading books about the outside. So just go to my website, check it out, check out Devon Miller's page, and he has their recommendation of books for children. And all you have to do, just pick one of them, anyone, and order one or order 10, and send it to your local children's hospital or to St. Jude's or Shriners Hospital for Children, because kids need books. We need more kids to read. Anyway, remember what I always tell everyone. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So everybody, get busy. Just have fun. And I hope that Carol J. Perry will have a series on the Hallmark Channel soon. Anyway, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, for everything. And he saluted me, and I saluted him, because I could have been a general. I should have been a general. And I would have been a better general than a lot of these guys and gals. Okay, everybody. Bye-bye now.
WTAN, Clearwater.
FM 106.1.
WDCF, Dade City.
FM 102.3.
WZHR, Zephyr Hills.
FM 104.3.